Yeah, I thought you said no more, like, no puns. We had three at the first quarter, man.
Tell me about it. It's just preseason.
Oh, no, no.
Hey, we wanted to get you a couple of
Yeah, thank you.
We want you to work, you know, in the stadium.
Yeah. I appreciate it.
Let's do it. Like that ref? That was pretty sweet, right?
He did say like that ref, didn't he? Like that ref? Pretty sweet. Guy doesn't get nervous before games. He's just balling. That's Caleb Williams.
You know what was interesting is how many people were left hanging yesterday in the Hard Knocks episode. Like, if you go back and watch it, there were a bunch of, like, people waiting on fist bumps or high fives. Eventually, they showed up, but there were definitely people left hanging.
Don't like that.
Like inside of the meeting. Like, when they finish the trade, one of the guys, like, reaches off from the table to fist bump the guy, and he just has to wait. And then he finally turns his way, and then he gives him the bump.
My favorite one of those in Chicago sports history. Do you remember the Scottie Pippen dunk on Patrick Ewing?
Yes.
When he teabags him, you know, just completely walks over his face.
Oh, we can say that on the radio?
I don't think you can.
And everybody's coming up to Pippen, and then there's like a beat, and then Randy Brown comes up to get a high five, and Pippen just walks right by him. He's like, no, I'm good with high fives now.
It's no Tom reason. Brady that usually gets left hanging, right? Even though he's, you know, Tom Brady and stuff.
That's funny. Like, that's a funny bit. But you're right. I didn't think about that. There's a lot of that. And frankly, as a person who likes to be a good teammate, it offends my sensibilities.
You're big into high fives, and that's one of the things I like about you.
Yeah, it's also
very dorky, but I am.
Are you that way when you clink glasses on a toast? Everybody's got to get everybody, or you go in a circle and make sure everybody at least has touched a glass that has touched the other glasses.
I think that it's okay. Is everyone doesn't have to touch up. If you have like a large group, it can get, like when we had dinner with Terry, like that was too many people to make sure that everyone touched up. As long as you get a little love from somebody, you're good.
I don't know.
This is how it is in church with peace be with you. Like, you can't say it to everybody. You just say it to the people who want to say it back and, like, who's around you.
I didn't know what to do the first time that I was at a service and they did that. I was like, hey, thanks and stuff.
It's just a religious what's up.
Right.
Yep.
No, it's cool. I like it.
But it's same concept.
And I say, hey, yeah.
So that's the next song during the break. I kind of am disturbed that we went with it and just still played Love Roller Coaster after the end of that roller coaster.
Had to.
Am I wrong? That song is called What's Up, though, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I, like, sometimes I'm like, wait, it's not called that. It's called something else. But no, it's called What's Up.
No, I love that song.
I always think that it's called What's Going On.
Everybody does.
Well, What's Going On is a Marvin Gaye song, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, what's going on?
But there's many songs that have the same name, but they're different songs.
Yes.
What's like, WAP?
Who sings?
Only one of those.
Oh, wait.
What? All right, Matt Eberflus. Yes. Well, when I think of WAP, I think immediately of the Bears head coach.
No.
Part of his makeover. Here.
Dear God, it's the most important hour of the show.
Good. So,
well, there's Dan ruining our shot at Matt Eberflus.
No, he's going to be awesome. He's going to be great. And he explained, why don't we do, let's first hear from Hard Knocks last night. Let's listen to Eberflus and Caleb Williams having their debriefing session, doing a little bit of film work after the Buffalo game.
So just to talk about your performance in terms of efficiency, why did you think you had success yesterday?
One, preparation. Mm-hmm. Two, confidence in it.
Right.
And I think three, just playing within the game.
Okay, spin around here. I just want to show you a couple plays. You can just spin that chair around. This is really good. I love the play fake. This is what I was talking about. So tell me about your footwork here. You like your left foot?
Yeah, I would say. I got the vertical step I wanted. Power step, and then good ball fake. I had eyes around fast as possible.
Yeah, I like the speed you're coming out of here. Now, that makes it really hard on the defense end, especially when you know you got that block.
Yeah.
And you're coming out with speed, and so is Cole.
Yeah.
You know, Cole's running with really good speed, too. You know, it's a good job on the pump. You know, you hold him up there a little bit. But so third and nine on this one. Tell me what you recognize about the coverage.
I recognize it was man, and I wanted to actually go to Rome before the play. I was thinking Rome was going to have a one-on-one with the one high. I thought
that's single high all the way, right?
Yeah, I thought DeMar was going to just
big box.
Yeah, thought I was going to have the big box fade. Didn't.
What did the coverage go to?
Two man.
That's right. So two man, now you know that, hey, there's a little bit of a liability in there in terms of your running lanes.
Yep. And then stepped up and I saw the C's part.
Yep. I think the slip and slide, so you got to go practice again a little bit. It's a little bit late on the kick.
That was pretty nice.
So what do you think you learned from that, from the whole experience yesterday?
Practice is harder than the game.
Well, you know what? It's true.
Yeah.
You know, practice is harder than the game.
Yeah.
Not really.
That was the only part where I was thinking, tell me that in week 14.
Or tell me that after your third series of downs.
And let me ask you this. When he asked, do you like where your left foot is there? Did it sound like a teacher who thought it was in the right place?
No, it sounded very much like that's not what we teach you.
Uh-huh.
Hey, why don't you switch your formation out of the shotgun and your footwork and see how that works out for you, and maybe it won't be great, and then we'll all be sitting here wondering what's happening a year from now?
He kind of had a dad tone there. Like, did you make a good decision? You know, you like where your foot is there? Yeah, and there's a and it sounded like maybe coach didn't like where his foot was.
He also didn't like his he didn't like the slide.
No,
like and I think that's on them. Like the concept of them trying that on the slip and slide to me is not the way, yo. Like that's not how you do's it.
I know. Why don't you just replicate it on the Soldier Field turf? There's one thing Matt Eberflus has been spot on about. Another thing we should probably discuss with him is that Soldier Field turf. You know, they switched to Bermuda and it's been a lot better ever since. And it makes me wonder if they just can't practice on something similar at Halas.
Well, I mean, there's all kinds of baseball sliding pads and stuff. I don't know if major league teams still practice sliding, but there are some levels.
I mean,
levels
that's what they should be working on. They should be working on a sliding pad, not a slip and slide, because of that's not.
Everybody got mad at me when I said that.
Okay, I don't think that's the only drill they did for that. I'm going crazy if that's the only one that they did.
I don't think it's a good drill to do at all.
The real one isn't TV friendly for an HBO viewer. The real one is for geeks like us.
I don't know, though, because I feel like we've seen slide stuff before on Hard Knocks, and it's been slide pads.
Are we all just going to ignore the previous quarterback sliding? That would indicate that perhaps this is their only drill.
Yeah, and he actually does have a background in baseball, and his slides were bad.
His slide was a drag jazz split.
He would always be too upright where people could take shots at him.
It was the way the back,
and they would never get flagged.
Yeah, well, a whole other discussion. But it was the way the back leg dragged, too. But I think about that. You know, that was something that always concerned me, was that slide. So I'm hoping that they do the other drills to figure that out.
Yeah, I just thought that Justin Fields slid with his just too much upper body in an L shape to his legs, where you want to really get down, 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 like you're like one of those Fast and the Furious stunts with a motorcycle having to get underneath a semi that's swinging around.
You know, you've never seen a Fast and Furious movie.
You know what I'm talking about.
Have
though.
You, though? Have you seen
the trailers.
No. You gotta watch one.
No.
What time is your flight?
Family.
What time is your flight?
5:55.
The first one's an
action. I'm getting right home. I'm packing. I'm leaving.
I think you should.
It's legitimately a good movie.
The first one is good. I think you should watch one of them on the plane. Whichever one is available, I think you should watch it.
Watching a Fast and the Furious movie.
It's a perfect plane movie, especially for that flight.
You can't leave. You've got to watch the whole thing.
No, I got work I got to do. I got things I got to put together. We're doing the podcast tomorrow, and I haven't done my stuff yet, and I got to have a bunch of things I got
to
do.
Sounds like the Fast and the Furious to me. Who's on the same flight with Dan? Is it you, Ray?
Yes. Ray is.
You got to make sure that he watches it.
All right, Dan, I'm going to distract you from all your busy work.
No,
and I'm going to make sure we watch.
Well, hey,
we're going to share earbuds and watch it.
I'm getting my stuff.
Done. When I flew with Dan.
Have a martini or a Bloody Mary or something. You're not doing any work.
I just got some inside info from our friend Jason Leisure.
Yes.
They have at least one field with the same grass at Halas that they have at Soldier Field, Tahoma 31. Thank you, Jason.
Hogue actually asked him about this in a presser earlier this season. I was trying to find it, but it's such a vague cut.
Wait,
that I couldn't.
Make the point you were going to make before. What are you saying about
no,
me?
When I flew with you to Vegas last time,
yeah.
This is what I'm going to say to Ray. Like, you were the one instigating. I was perfectly fine to chill at the gate, and Dan's like, oh, let's go get some drinks. And I already had a couple, so all right, whatever. And then on the plane, you're going, let's get more drinks. Okay.
Well, I made, you
You're
know.
The one that opened the bottle of Jack in the limo, too.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, my, I'm not yeah, doing
You're saying you're going to be working.
Whatever you're getting in mind tonight over here.
I got work to do.
We're watching Fast and Furious, Dan. It's happening.
Dan just wants to look at more stats on Javonte Green. He's not coming back.
You have to be
He's
very
following
clear,
his
though,
biggest
Ray,
fan.
Because there's two movies. One of them is The Fast and the Furious. And the other one is Fast and Furious.
Now, Fast and Furious is the original, is it not? Or is it the?
No, I think The Fast and the Furious is the original.
All right, we got to go with that OG.
I think Fast and Furious is 6.
See, Studs is ruining the whole
thing. Listen here.
You got to understand. When we actually, once we hit the road, you know, things are different. Things are real, especially, you know, we don't have to work after, you know.
You just said you have work to do.
I mean, I do today, but maybe I can get
He's
it done
He's not
quickly.
Going to do work.
Yeah,
his work is reading about Javonte.
Hey, we're going to watch all...
It
we're
going
to go all the way to Tokyo Drift, Dan. We're going to watch like 3 of these things.
Take him to space. Take him to the one where they go to space.
I didn't even
That's
watch that
nine.
No. And I'm not ending up at the Mantis with you guys either.
The Mantis is awesome.
I know. You're going to make your pilgrimage to the Mantis. It's like your personal Hajj.
I think... You know, they're just goals, okay? And, like, maybe she represents a life goal. Spitfire people, rock out to some Def Leppard, and, you know,
so,
bite somebody's
So the
head
Fast
off.
And the Furious is the first movie.
Okay.
Fast and Furious is number 4.
It makes total sense.
Sure.
Which one is the one where they go to space?
Well, that's like Rocky
that's
Balboa is the 6th movie, right? You had Rocky and then Rocky Balboa later. I don't know.
It's actually a good movie.
Well, we're going to Circa in Vegas.
If you haven't figured that out
we're
yet.
We're going today. Our shows are tomorrow and Friday. The three of us are going to be there for the Ultimate Contest weekend ahead of the football season, part of Radio Row, where over 30 of your favorite radio stations, podcasts, and videocasts will be talking about Circa Survivor, Circa Million, and the upcoming football season. Any entrant in the contest can take part in parties across the Circa properties, including Stadium Swim, Bar Canada, and more. So don't miss the Circa preview panel on August 24th. Some of the top experts in the football world will be previewing the upcoming season and giving you some of their best bets. If you want to experience this with us, go to CircaLasVegas.com for more info. We had more Eberflus that we wanted to play. We heard him talking to Caleb Williams. And this is his larger picture assessment of his biggest takeaway on how Caleb Williams has been in the preseason.
Just the process of being able to get, you know, into the huddle, make the call, be clean, get to the line, you know, look at the shot clock and say, okay, this is a little bit low, and move guys around fast enough to get the snap off, have awareness. You know, and then really do a good job of at the line of scrimmage to be able to adjust to what the defense gives you. You know, and make your adjustments from there. And I think it's been clean. And then post-snap, I think he's been relatively good in terms of going through his progressions. you know, making good decisions, you know, taking care of the football in the pocket with two hands and moving around there when he has done have to do that. But overall, I thought a good preseason for him.
Shane said yesterday that he's been pleased with how when Caleb comes off, even before he gets the Surface Pro to look at the play, he already knows what went wrong, how he can diagnose it. How have you noticed him and just that learning on the fly and being able to diagnose what went wrong without being told this is what went wrong?
Yeah, I think once he's learned the offense and knows where everybody's supposed to be, then he can really start to dissect of where the breakdown happened or what the case may be. But he's always done a really good job of that. He can see a lot of things and chunk a lot of information on the field for sure. You know, he's always been great at that, understanding space and where people are. And he's been really doing a good job of coaching the other guys and helping those other guys. And they've been helping him. So it's been a process of, you know, two-way communication. So it's been good.
From the moment you drafted Caleb and made him the number one quarterback to now, what is it about him that has made this plan look like it's going to work?
Well, he's a great learner, very smart. He works really hard, but he's also able to work with others. You know, he's compatible personality-wise, instinct-wise, to be able to communicate with people, and his willingness to learn. You know, some people like, you know, you first time you meet him, it's like, man, this guy is a know-it-all. You know what I mean? You get that feeling? Not about any of you guys, but you know, it kind of turns you off, right, a little bit. He is not that way at all. You know, this guy has had tremendous success, you know, Heisman, first pick in the draft, very successful as a college player. And, you know, and his willingness to learn is second to none. I mean, he just wants to grab the information, learn, and get better. And when he does have adversity, he rises to the challenge, and that's what you want from your quarterback.
All green lights so far. Everything's still good. What are you guys giggling about over there?
Oh, it sounds like Coach Eberflus thought Caleb was a little bit of a know-it-all, then said, you ever just meet somebody and just say to yourself, wow, they really think they know it all?
Man, he's going to hate Friday.
Well, didn't they say that when they went out, when they first met him and they went for sushi, right, that Caleb said, I got it. You got to get this role. You got to get that role. He, like, ordered for everybody.
And they were like, how old are you? How much sushi have you had?
Well, the one that the dissenting opinion on the sushi apparently was Ian Cunningham. He was the one
that's
was
his
like,
job, right?
I guess it is the job, right?
Doesn't that fit exactly what he does with Pace? Like, no, don't. No,
I like it.
No, that Ian was like, yeah, how much sushi has this young man had? Like, he thinks he knows. But that's all right. I kind of like it because he felt like, look, let me show you guys around. This is how I roll.
I think it's a baller move. I really do.
But I thought about this a lot. The Bird Streets Club outing, like, Matt Eberflus and Ryan Poles at Bird Street. And, of course, I just picture them in Bears gear. Like, the Bears quarter zip. And they're just standing there, like, going over some film.
I don't know, man. Now that we know what Flus is like at the party scene at his house, I'm thinking he's dressed up like West Side Mike going to these things.
Okay, West Side Mike.
Hot garbage.
West Side Mike's birthday picture was elite.
That man is 60 years old and
works out a lot.
In better shape than anybody.
He's ripped, absolutely rocked up.
Yeah, you don't pull off that suit without like working hard. Happy birthday, West Side Mike. I'm sorry I'm a couple days late. I'm with you though. Matt Eberflus party game, yeah, with your palatial estate on the lake. It's tough, man. It's tough. You got the fade, you got the beard, y'all are looking stylish.
Okay, got bottle service, right? What are we getting? Bent velvet rope, right? Okay.
Our culture is awesome.
I did wonder at Bird Streets who's running that show. Just curious.
Next up, Russell Dorsey on baseball and more on The Score.
You know, some people like, you know, you first time you meet him, it's like, man, this guy is a know-it-all. You know what I mean? You get that feeling. Not about any of you guys, but.
Russell Dorsey, national MLB insider for Yahoo Sports.
For Cubs fans, you want to be playing games in September that matter. You want to be heading into the next season with your arrow pointing up.
insider and analyst for Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV+.
Actions speak louder than words, specifically Jerry Reinsdorf saying, you know what, I don't know any of y'all, and I'm not going to even go through the process. I'm going to pick the guy right now that I want to be the general manager of the Chicago White Sox.
Insider and analyst on MLB Network.
What's up, Russ?
Russell Dorsey with Bernstein, Holmes, and Rahimi on 670 The Score. The Score.
Time to talk some baseball with Russell Dorsey on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Russell Dorsey is on Twitter at Russ_Dorsey1. Hello, sir. How are you?
Hi, guys. How are we feeling today?
Russ, you have to follow up on the hot topic that we had with you last week. Have you decided the locations for Rust Fest 2025? Or is it 2024?
It's technically 2025. Yeah, I've made final selections.
Would you like to share?
I mean, if you guys would like me to, sure.
Yes, that was the whole reason I asked.
I'm flying out of Chicago on New Year's Day, and we're going Chicago to Lisbon. Train from Lisbon to Porto after a couple days. Porto to Barcelona. Or no, Porto to Madrid. Madrid to Barcelona. Then we're going to do Switzerland.
Damn,
Brussels.
Russ.
Berlin. Amsterdam. London. Home.
RussFest is going to be amazing.
Man, that sounds excellent.
You have to share some pictures.
We'll see how I'm feeling.
Well, and if you want pictures, we have a sleeveless Russ Dorsey at twitch.tv/Chicago6.
The monster. He travels with me on the road.
Unbelievable. I'm with you. Suns out, guns out today. Can I interest you in a stat that this entire show will enjoy, but also not enjoy, but it will make sense?
Okay.
Guess who has the best record in baseball since June 1st? The Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
46-24. There goes that man again.
Yeah, look, I think that the Arizona Diamondbacks, as a matter of fact, I'll say two teams that I wouldn't want to see in October right now. Arizona Diamondbacks, San Diego Padres. And I think when you look at the Diamondbacks and what they were last year, they were the surprise. They were the team that was young, that had never been there before. And having that experience of getting to the World Series and saying, oh, we can beat the Phillies. We can beat the Dodgers. We ran into a buzzsaw in the Texas Rangers, but like we were there and played decent baseball. So that's a team that I know Ketel Marte just went on the IL a couple of days ago. You're going to get him back before you get to the postseason. It's a good baseball team. And having that experience they had last year, I think only helps them potentially spoil for one of these big boys once we get to October.
Let's talk about those Padres for a second, because they jumped out early in the trade market. You know, there are plenty of people that will tell you that that's not a thing that's done or a smart thing to do. But they jumped out early, and it looks like they're reaping the benefits of that.
I think that AJ Preller has learned valuable lessons over the last couple of years. AJ Preller usually goes big game hunting, right? Whether that's in the offseason or at the deadline, right? That's why you go out, you go get Hader, you go get Manny Machado, you sign for Tatis to a long-term deal, you get Xander Bogaerts, you go trade for all these different guys, right? You go get a Luis Arraez. And those moves hadn't worked, right? Like, they've been to an NLCS, but that's about it. And this year, I think they may potentially have the best deadline of any team, where they said, we're going to bolster our bullpen, where our seventh, eighth, ninth inning of Jason Adam, Tanner Scott, Robert Suarez is one that you're not going to be able to overcome in a 3-game series or in a 7-game series. And then they can shorten the game because Brian Hoying, who they got from the Marlins, has been very good for them. Yuki Matsui, Adrian Morihona are having career years. Jeremiah Estrada, former Cubs guy. Like, those guys are really pitching well for them since they all got put together and were able to kind of slot back. That's something that I think is going to really help them as we go down the stretch here. And their offense has really picked up over the last 6 to 8 weeks, too.
When do the injuries become too much for even a team like the Atlanta Braves to handle?
I think they're too much. Like, I look at it. I didn't like what the Braves did at the deadline, where all they really did was bring back Jorge Soler, who's been hitting for them. But at the same time, with all the injuries and all the loss that they have, like, you can only plug so many holes. You lose your best hitter and best starting pitcher. That's tough for any team. Then you lose Austin Riley, who did not have a great first half, had started to pick it up over the last couple of weeks or so. Then you lose him. You lose Ozzie Albies. And after a while, you have 35-year-old Chris Sale, who you didn't even know what you were going to get coming into the season, holding everything up. And you look at their lineup yesterday, it was like Marcell Ozuna and Jared Kelnick hitting fifth, and Gio Urshela, who just got released. And they're really trying to patch it up. And I just don't think that it's going to work for them, because you have a team in the New York Mets who are still playing good baseball. And while they're, I think, a game and a half out at this point, I just don't know how long the Braves starting pitching can hold things up for them.
Russ, I'm having fun with records today. So let's do a little surprise for people who might not know, like the woman singing surprise, surprise. The only team the only division in the American League that has three teams with plus 70 records is the AL Central.
I was about to say, I know who that is.
And so what was all this bad division talk? We can be competitive and we're bolstered by a division that's not that good, so we can feel better about ourselves. And then we have the worst record perhaps ever. So I feel like that's worth discussing when you've got 73-52 Cleveland, 70-56 Kansas City, and 70-56 Minnesota. Like if you're in second place in the West, for example, you might be out of the wild card just based on that alone.
Yeah, and I'm actually going to write about that this week for Yahoo. I'm going to go see the Yankees and Guardians tonight up in the Bronx and get ready for that. Actually, after I get off with you guys, it's something that one Lawrence Holmes asked me about in May, where it's like, Russ, do you believe in the Royals? And I said, no, Lawrence Holmes, I do not believe in the Royals. And I think it was valid at the time because they had great starting. No, put your arms down, sir. they had great starting pitching. And Bobby Witt Jr. is an absolute stud. And Salvi was hitting. But their offense were those two guys. The third best offense in baseball over the last month is the Kansas City Royals. They're finally getting offense to support that starting pitching. Paul DeJong, who was a really under-the-radar move for them at the deadline, bringing him over from the White Sox, has continued to hit the ball out of the ballpark, playing a really solid third base for them. OPS over 950 since he got there. Like, they're getting it done, and it's not just smoke and mirrors anymore. And they're starting to feel like that team. Like, they're starting to feel like the team where it's like, nah, we might disappoint somebody. Somebody's going to get upset if we see them in that first round. And they're fun, and they have a young superstar that's putting the team on his shoulders and saying, yeah, I know Aaron Judge is really good, and they got Soto over there, but I'm pretty good too, and I'm only 22 years old. And Bobby Witt Jr., the guy's hitting 400 at Kauffman Stadium this year. He might be the first player since Bonds in 04 to hit 400 at home. Like, what he's been able to do on a nightly basis is ridiculous. But yeah, that division is three teams, even though Cleveland hasn't been playing the greatest baseball as of late. The Twins, I don't know how the Twins do it, but they play good ball. They've been finding a way to keep themselves in this race, and obviously the Royals. So, yeah, salute to the AL Central, who we all thought would be terrible, and we all thought the Guardians would run around and hide, and here are the Royals and Twins saying, nah, not yet.
I do want to stay with the AL Central for a second, because my thing is, Russ, how is Cleveland still doing this? Like, how do you go from one of the greatest managers of all time to a guy who's never managed, and everything seems to be fine? Like, they continue to be problematic. And if I'm the White Sox, like, as an organization, I'm looking up and I'm going, bleep, I got 10 years of dealing with Bobby Witt. Mm-hmm. For some strange reason, the Twins continue to be a thorn in everybody's side, except for the Yankees in the playoffs. And Cleveland is this train that won't stop running. How have they been able to build this so that it could sustain even after having a Hall of Fame manager leave?
Good organization. And I think when you look at that transition where Tito was part of that and said, nah, I like this vote guy. And to have a guy who we always talk about former catchers being managers, it usually works out. And you also have a team that kind of had the pieces assembled, right? They were young. They were young last year. And then they had some adjustments in their profile as a ball club. It's usually pitching and defense. This year it was offense and slug, something that they hadn't been before. And while I'm still concerned about their pitching going into September and October, I think when you have an organization that is able to run itself, you can worry about those things as they come. Similar to Houston, the Astros were 10 games back at one point. And they looked in the mirror and said, we're fine. And you know what? They're fine. They have a 5-game lead on the Mariners now, who that's something we're going to have to talk about at some point because bad. When you're an organization that has been able to put yourself in positions to win, and you're a winning organization, that's what they do. That's what separates the teams that get to the postseason every year from the teams that get there once every 10 to 12 years.
Hey, Russ, real quick, something I read the other day that I found intriguing has to do with Paul Skeens and the plan for maybe shutting him down at this point because of the innings load that he's had over the past, you know, couple calendar years. And then the effect on Rookie of the Year voting. You think, okay, well, big deal, he misses out on an award. Well, it's so much more than that now, because the Baseball Writers Association of America now can affect service time and now can affect what that where you finish in Rookie of the Year voting can do for how quickly you become a free agent and how long a team has you under contract control. Craig Calcaterra wrote a big essay the other day saying it's purely 100% unethical that writers should abstain from this process, that they should not be involved. There should be objective metrics involved and not opinions of baseball writers when it comes to affecting teams and players' personal and professional business. Do you agree?
I'll say this. I think this is something that we've, I guess, seen before when it came to bonuses being in guys' contracts and clauses based off of where they finished. And that's basically been eradicated, where that's not something that's a part of the process anymore, because I think you had writers that felt like, yo, I don't want to be the reason a guy does or does not get paid. That should be on you as the team. Like, I shouldn't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just want to vote for the guy that I feel is deserving of the award. I think we'll get to that process or get to that point with this. Do I think Paul Skeens is going to be a top two finisher for Cy Young? For Rookie of the Year voting? I absolutely do. And I don't think it will be an issue this year, even if he wins it or not, because I think Jackson Merrill is actually going to be the guy that wins it. But I don't think that writers want to be part of guys losing service time. Writers don't want to be a part of guys getting paid or not, right? Like, we just want to vote for guys who we feel are deserving for the awards that we were assigned. So, I think it'll be a conversation. It'll have to be a bigger conversation between the league and the Players Association, because obviously it's an honor to be able to vote for awards. At the same time, like, you don't want to feel responsible for somebody's livelihood getting changed in any way.
Fair enough. Russ Dorsey, thank you, sir.
Thanks, guys. Have fun in Vegas.
Thanks, Russ.
Thank you.
That's Russell Dorsey. When we return, I needed to have the Austin Reed singing performance whiteboarded for, or blackboarded for me, however you want to describe it, because there's context and there's sort of codes involved here, of which I was not aware of why it elicited the reaction that it did from his current and soon to be former Bears teammates.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score in Odyssey Station. Odyssey Station. Odyssey Station.
Man, this is one of my favorite parts of Hard Knocks this week, was seeing Austin Reed sing Love by Keisha Cole. That moves some people. I love
Shout
that.
Shout out to Austin Reed for that.
Yeah, that
was a good choice.
First of all, Keisha Cole to me has one of the best voices in music. How many octaves do you have to hit to successfully sing Love by Keisha Cole? Three at least?
Yeah, you gotta know what you're doing. if you're going to try that song on. And I appreciate Austin Reed for the effort. He didn't do a great job of singing it because, you know, he's not a professional singer. But he clearly knew that song, and that song meant something to him in one regard or the other. I thought it was a highlight of last night's Hard Knocks.
I didn't get it. I didn't get it. I'm like, this guy sucks. Why are they cheering? And then, they're probably just pitying him because he tried and they're overcompensating. But there's more going on than that.
They're not pitying him. They're vibing with him. Because that's not a choice that you would think that a football player would make. Two, it's not really a choice that you would think, looking at Austin Reed, which can be unfair, that you would think that he would make. And you put those two things together, and you had those dudes vibing out in the room.
The reactions from the grown men in the room was my favorite.
Yes.
Like, I just enjoy seeing dudes sing some serious love songs every now and then from the bottom of their hearts. And that's exactly what you saw.
If I didn't get it, maybe there are people listening who also died. What the history of the song?
I think you're trying to.
I
not
swear
get
to God.
It. You're making it way more complicated. Austin Reed picked a song that a lot of people, if not all of the people in the room, knew to sing along, which is key when you're going up there and being vulnerable and you've got a microphone. Like, think of it like karaoke. He picked a really good song. And then he picked a song that people would allow themselves to be vulnerable. And they shared that moment with him. It's as simple as that.
Okay, I'm saying you're trying to look for
some deeper meaning to it. And it was a fun moment last night. And all you had to do was look at the guys in the room. That wasn't pity. That was joy. That was guys reminiscing about loves they have lost. That is those guys vibing out and being like, go ahead, Austin, do your thing.
I loved it. The reactions were really funny on social media, but just seeing some of these dudes who, football players look intimidating. You don't think they're affected by anything, and they're just singing the song at the top of their lungs. Like, I love that. I think it's so much fun. Darnell Wright in the background.
It's the same thing as Patrick Wisdom having, I want to dance with somebody, as his walk-up. It plays against type, and it's fun.
What's the name of the song again?
Love.
The name of the song is Love. Okay, but it's sort of an anthemic, sensitive love song.
Yeah, I mean, because she says she never knew what she was missing, and then they broke up. Breakup songs are good, man. But you're not a karaoke guy in general, right, Dan? Like, you're not a big, like... Like, I have a buddy who sings Careless Whisper, because it's ridiculous, but everybody starts singing it, because they know the lyrics.
That's why I sent you that Scratch Bastard. That's what... You gotta get through it. Layla, I'm telling you.
Oh, no. I'm not sighing because you're wrong. I'm sighing because you're right and I'm wrong.
The last 5 minutes, I'm telling you.
He's just brilliant. He's a really popular DJ who, true to his name, can scratch like nobody can. Like, he's a really talented artist.
Okay.
And he would probably do a remix to Love because, knowing him, he can remix everything.
For sure.
But I did think it was a great moment because those are the kind of things that... You know, it shows teammates, right? And it shows just somebody putting themselves out there in a way that you don't normally see, knowing that they're not going to nail the notes, but everybody's going to have fun with it. And I feel like that's exactly what happened. And yes, I do love seeing grown men react to some love songs. I can't be the only one with a breakup song or two. I know there are some grown men out there who like a good love song every now and then.
Austin Reed went out there as a 24-year-old and sang some grown folks music. People appreciated it.
I put in all caps in my notebook, the adult men. I love this.
I hope his teammates in Saskatoon or in Winnipeg appreciate it similarly.
He can be my teammate at karaoke anytime. We'll get you a beer and everything.
Jason Leisure.
He might make this practice squad.
Yeah, I get it. Would they keep Four is a lot, though.
You can keep three, and then you have a practice squad
guy. This is the way.
I'll probably keep two. I think you keep two, and maybe you have your practice squad ripping. I don't know. I know Jason Leisure is coming up, and maybe he'll have that answer for us, among other things, and why he's trampling all over our guy Mark Grody, and there's all this bad blood, and now they hate each other.
Knife fight? I heard there was knife a fight. Knife fight.
Yeah, or there is going to be. There's going to be a series of knife fights.
Yeah, we got to ask him about it on The Score.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2, on Sports Radio 670 The Score. In Odyssey Station, Odyssey Station, Odyssey Station.
Man, this is one of my favorite parts of Hard Knocks this week, was seeing Austin Reed sing Love by Keisha Cole. That moves some people. I love
Shout
that.
Shout out to Austin Reed for that.
Yeah, that
was a good choice.
First of all, Keisha Cole to me has one of the best voices in music. How many octaves do you have to hit to successfully sing Love by Keisha Cole? Three at least?
Yeah, you gotta know what you're doing if you're going to try that song on. And I appreciate Austin Reed for the effort. He didn't do a great job of singing it because, you know, he's not a professional singer. But he clearly knew that song, and that song meant something to him in one regard or the other. I thought it was a highlight of last night's Hard Knocks.
I didn't get it. I didn't get it. I'm like, this guy sucks. Why are they cheering? And then, they're probably just pitying him because he tried and they're overcompensating. But there's more going on than that.
They're not pitying him. They're vibing with him. Because that's not a choice that you would think that a football player would make. Two, it's not really a choice that you would think, looking at Austin Reed, which can be unfair, that you would think that he would make. And you put those two things together, and you had those dudes vibing out in the room.
The reactions from the grown men in the room was my favorite.
Yes.
Like, I just enjoy seeing dudes sing some serious love songs every now and then from the bottom of their hearts. And that's exactly what you saw.
So if I didn't get it, maybe there are people listening who also don't. What the history of the song?
I think you're trying to.
I
not
swear to
it.
God.
You're making it way more complicated. Austin Reed picked a song that a lot of people, if not all of the people in the room, knew to sing along, which is key when you're going up there and being vulnerable and you've got a microphone. Like, think of it like karaoke. He picked a really good song. And then he picked a song that people would allow themselves to be vulnerable. And they shared that moment with him. It's as simple as that.
Okay, I'm saying you're trying to look for
some deeper meaning to it. And it was a fun moment last night. And all you had to do was look at the guys in the room. That wasn't pity. That was joy. That was guys reminiscing about loves they have lost. That is those guys vibing out and being like, go ahead, Austin, do your thing.
I loved it. The reactions were really funny on social media, but just seeing some of these dudes who, football players look intimidating. You don't think they're affected by anything, and they're just singing the song at the top of their lungs. Like, I love that. I think it's so much fun. Darnell Wright in the background.
It's the same thing as Patrick Wisdom having, I want to dance with somebody, as his walk-up. It plays against type, and it's fun.
What's the name of the song again?
Love.
The name of the song is Love. Okay, but it's sort of an anthemic, sensitive love song.
Yeah, I mean, because she says she never knew what she was missing, and then they broke up. Breakup songs are good, man. But you're not a karaoke guy in general, right, Dan? Like, you're not a big, like, I have a buddy who sings Careless Whisper because it's ridiculous, but everybody starts singing it because they know the lyrics.
That's why I sent you that Scratch Bastard. That's what you got to get through it. Layla, I'm telling you.
Oh, no, no, last, no. I'm not sighing because you're wrong. I'm sighing because you're right and I'm
the
wrong.
The last 5 minutes, I'm telling you.
Dude, he's just brilliant. He's a really popular DJ who, true to his name, can scratch like nobody can. Like, he's a really talented artist.
Okay.
And he would probably do a remix to Love because knowing him, he can remix everything.
For sure.
But I did think it was a great moment because those are the kind of things that, you know, it shows teammates, right? And it shows just somebody putting themselves out there in a way that you don't normally see, knowing that they're not going to nail the notes, but everybody's going to have fun with it. And I feel like that's exactly what happened. And yes, I do love seeing grown men react to some love songs. I yes. can't be the only one with a breakup song or two. I know there are some grown men out there who like a good love song every now and then.
Austin Reed went out there as a 24-year-old and sang some grown folks music. People appreciated it.
I put in all caps in my notebook, the adult men. I love yes. this.
Well, I hope his teammates in Saskatoon or in Winnipeg appreciate it similarly.
He can be my teammate at karaoke anytime. We'll get you a beer and everything.
Jason Leisure.
He might make this practice squad.
Yeah, I get it. Would they keep fours a lot, though?
You can keep three, and then you have a practice squad
guy. This is the way.
I'll probably keep two. I think you keep two and maybe a practice squad ripping. I don't know. I know Jason Leisure is coming up, and maybe he'll have that answer for us, among other things, and why he's trampling all over our guy Mark Grody, and there's all this bad blood, and now they hate each other.
Knife fight? I heard there was knife a fight. Knife fight.
Yeah, or there is going to be. There's going to be a series of knife fights.
Yeah, we got to ask him about it on The Score.